right.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the long and winding Royal Road. My name is W.H. Park, and this is the show that looks at the greatest era of wrestling in the history of this wonderful sport that we all love. Not sports entertainment, sport. All Japan Pro Wrestling, Zen Nihon Pro Wrestling, the style of Odu, the Royal Road, the King's Road, whatever you want to call it. It's the best. Don't believe any of these people that tell you 2016 to 2024 is the greatest year of wrestling. It's not. It's a fucking joke. That's right. I'm here to tell you the last nine years of wrestling are a complete fucking joke. Across the world, there's pockets of good wrestling out there, don't get me wrong, but for the most part, it's a pathetic wasteland of sports goofiness. Not even fucking entertainment, it's not even fucking sports, it's just goofy ass shit. That's right, and it's led by America is the leader of goofy ass shit that passes as professional wrestling. And you want to know who the leader of American goofy ass shit is? I'm not going to tell you. You already know. I don't have to say it. Try not to get us canceled and get media access revoked for everyone else here at Post. Just me. I don't care. But anyways, this is the show about All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 90s. And I'm happy to welcome back one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite collaborators, and that is Dylan Fox from the Eastern Lariat. Dylan, how are you, my friend?
Definitely. The recent era of wrestling is not the greatest compared to the stuff we talk about on this show, on this wonderful long and winding Royal Road that you have set up for me and all of the people out there. But I just want to say thank you for having me on again. And thank you to all the listeners that have always supported us, all the stuff we've done. I especially want to shout out one thing for sure. And that is your show with Cameron about the Jumbo documentary, which I always say our show about Kawada had to be both of our best shows, like, you know, ever, pretty much. But then that came out, and Cameron just, I think he beat me, unfortunately. That Jumbo documentary was so good. Like, you did an amazing job, and he is just a fantastic guest. So to be along in the lines with him, and you've got some, like, star-studded people that have come on your show, of course, and a lot of very knowledgeable ones as well. Even from the very beginning, you know, the very first episode, you've brought a lot of really cool, super smart people on. So I'm honored to be in, and honored to be on this episode as well.
I think you're what? This is number three? Is this number three for you?
It has to be more than that, because we
Kawada,
did...
We did... someone else. We talked about another match, and then we're going to talk about a kind of a not a biography episode. This is kind of a mini bio. But we're going to focus on this person's, I don't know, like, contributions to wrestling in All Japan and Pro Wrestling NOAH via the match we're going to talk about today. What match are we going to talk about today, Dylan?
That's right. You know, as always, you're so wonderful about the choices. And I picked for the subject, that is, of course, recently the retirement of Yoshinari Ogawa, the legendary junior heavyweight wrestler in All Japan and NOAH. I picked his match versus Jun Akiyama, one of our favorites, everyone's favorites, if you know anything about wrestling, pretty much. They wrestled on September 11th, 1998. And it's a match that's important to his story somewhat, and just a really heck of a match that we could talk about as well. Lots of interesting talking points to go through it. And so I'm very happy that we are getting to do this. I know in the past, this is, we've done multiple Kawada matches in the past as well. I remember specifically the Kawada and Misawa Dome match from earlier this year in 98, which we had a long conversation on. We did the tag team match with Kawada and Fuchi versus Iizuka and Nagata as well. And I believe there was another one that we did that I can't remember right now. But
that wasn't the Kawada biography episode.
Yes, those were not the Kawada biography episodes. Okay. They were separate episodes on there. Look it up in the archive.
Listen, I you know what, I'll be upfront with everyone out here listening. I my memory is not what it used to be, and I've done like almost 50 of these fucking things. I can't remember everyone who's been. I sometimes will like contact someone. Would you like to be on? Oh, for the second time? Oh, it's your second time? Oh, geez.
Yeah, only 50. It feels like you've done a million of these, to be honest. But you have to go back to the old days too, with the the Liger series you did, the G1 finals. You have got, you are like the king of Japanese pro wrestling.
No. Listen. Dylan is so modest. Listen, I tell people, you want to know more about, I cover the whole scene once a month, and it's more like what's happening at the time. Every week, the Eastern Lariat, go to patreon.com Eastern Lariat, sign up for the big Hashimoto tier, which I am on, by the way. That's the biggest tier. It's only how much is the Hashimoto tier?
Oh, it's just $5 a month. Every month we've worked hard not to. We're not just coming to American inflation, since you mentioned earlier. We refuse. Both myself and Strigger, who is from Germany, to be fair. So I guess that gives us a little bounce back. But always doing some fun stuff. I cover everything in the Japanese scene. Joshi. We've got a lot of stuff going on. The Mari Gold tournament just ended, and obviously, I know your usual co-host Karen. She does a lot of great stuff for that. I loved being on with you two guys, just on your regular show last year as well. So, whenever we get together at WH, it's always a lot of fun. You were actually on in the early days. You haven't been on our show in a while, but I remember when you were still in Japan, you had some great rants about poor live, experiences that you've been through.
Oh yes. Big Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Don't get me wrong. I usually would have fun mostly at those shows, but like when you get like light tube shards in your lap, not so much fun. You would think some of you probably think, no, that would be awesome, dude. No, when you fear for getting cut and getting cancer from fucking light tube fucking dust, whatever the fuck's in there to make it fucking glow, it's not fun. Trust me. Anyways. And when those two fucking bald-headed brothers, what's their names again?
You're talking about the Brahmin brothers?
The Brahmin brothers. When they're going around soaking people, that's not fun. I don't want to go to a show to get wet. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Fuck you and your sports entertainment goofy-ass shit. Anyways, we're not talking about the Brahmin brothers. I don't want to talk about the Brahmin brothers. I don't want to get in
bad. I apologize for even bringing that up.
It's okay. Yes, we did that. I think we did a show on Eastern Lariat where I called you directly after coming back from a Yokohama show for Big Japan Pro Wrestling. And it was like a 4-hour show or something like that. I was very tired afterward. Yeah. I lost my voice. I could lose my voice today. But we try not to get to that point. But we're talking about a great Yoshinari Gawa. And I got to say, Dylan, let me tell you, when I first came across Yoshinari Gawa on my videotapes, I was not impressed, because to me, and I'll say this, I wasn't a big fan of Tawei either, but over time I came around, I saw the greatness in Akira Tawei, and over the last several, I'm going to say the last 15 years, I've come to recognize the greatness of Yoshinari Gawa as a masterful technical wrestler, someone who was bringing the Lancashire catch wrestling style into All Japan, into the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Division and the Tag Team Division with Misawa, at a time when it wasn't really being seen anywhere outside of like maybe the shows like the Brian Dixon shows and All Star Wrestling over in England still, right? And he's like a precursor to like Zack Sabre Jr. He would help mentor and help make Zack become the wrestler that he would become in 2024. Very important figure, and he's a very interesting case, because he's one of the few Japanese wrestlers that crossed over from being a junior heavyweight into the heavyweight ranks, and then went back to being a very successful junior heavyweight wrestler. Let's talk a bit. What about you? What was your first impression when you came across Yoshinari Gawa and his zebra striped bicycle shorts?
Yes, as always, that's the first thing you notice is his attire and his gear. But like you, I have heard that same tale about Ogawa and a little bit about Tawei as well, people have said. But when I first got on, I got into Japanese wrestling. I was a big forum guy, going to like Strong Style Symphony and talking to a bunch of old people from there. And I remember being like the Ogawa defender on there. Him and Kanemaru were like the people that were constantly like, oh man, these guys are getting a push. Why can't it be Kenta and Nakajima and Marufuji and so on and so forth, or Suzuki even somewhat, Kotaro. So a lot of people I saw were not into Ogawa a lot. And I did say he was very underrated at the time. You know, I think a lot of people had a negative, especially not so much nowadays, but especially in the 2000, like late 2000s when I started, 08, 09, even to the early 2010s before the tag team with Zach started. I think a lot of people judged him for his heavyweight run in NOAH, which was not a great decision, like to for Akiyama's benefit at the time. I think most people would agree with that, which nowadays people, I think, are so far removed from that era. They look upon stuff like that a lot more fondly. And so they don't have those misgivings and they could just appreciate who he is as a wrestler. And in the All Japan, that was a little bit before I went back and saw that later. And of course, we're talking about him on this very show. You know, he was not what you would want if you are a tape trader at the time or a online Japanese wrestling fan. He is not the style of wrestler that Misawa, Kobashi, you know, Kawada are. He was a much different style, for say the least. I'm glad you brought up those Dixon shows because that style still is somewhat prevalent even to this day with Joel Redman being in All Japan, getting brought back recently, who's a big on those camp shows. They call him a lot. Like one of my favorites was like Dean Allmark, who wrestled a ton of those shows at the time, James Mason and people like that, who I have a lot of respect for. So yes, Ogawa is very much of that vein. And he's done a great job, whether in a singles run he had. I think a lot of people appreciate his work now more than they did maybe when I started, or especially when you, we know, in the All Japan era. And even as a tag worker, you mentioned the team with Zach. He's had multiple teams that he's done great work with. And I try to forget that, you know, he was in Stinger at the end. But besides that, it was all good. You know,
as long as he's not, I'm just glad he was never in the Rattels, you know. As you know, my undying hatred of the Rattels and
they brought
eternal
them back,
hatred.
Bro.
I saw. And I don't think I'm not. I refuse to watch any of their matches, you know, unless it's like someone I really, really like and I know they're going to get beat up. I refuse to watch Rattels matches.
Listen, know? I was. This is a little bit of a tangent we're going off on, but screw it. I am the original hater of Hayata and Yohei going back to the hooligans days of NOAH. So I will continue that run forever. And I will never approve of the Rattels. Although I have defended Tadasuke before more than you. That's the only difference.
No, I hate him too. I hate him too. I hate him too.
None of these people are as good as Ogawa.
No, definitely not. So Yoshinari Ogawa was born November 2nd, 1966. So it makes him now 57 years old. So the fact that he pretty much had a career for over 40 years. Or close to 40 years. I think he started really young. So he debuted in All Japan in 1985. So what is that? Let me see. 85 minus 66. Where is my calculator?
That's like 19, right?
85 minus 66 is 19. Yeah, so he has been wrestling for a very long time. 57 minus 19, that's 38. So he's wrestling close 38 years, close to 40 years. What an amazing career. And I would say if you asked him, do you have any regrets about your career, he'd probably say no. He wrestled everyone he could possibly wrestle in his career. He's won multiple championships, especially in the latter half of his career, multiple championships in other companies too recently. Yeah. Like I said, he debuted for All Japan Wrestling in 1985. He entered their dojo system pretty young, probably around 18, straight out of high school. I can't remember if he ever finished high school, but I'm going to assume he did. He was a young boy in opening matches, losing left, right, and center as to pay his dues, until he was recruited into Genichiro Tenryu's Revolution Unit in 1987, along with Asahara Ahara, who was Tenryu's tag team partner, and then Kawada and Samson Fuyuki, who formed the very fun tag team of Footloose. And I maybe Footloose inspired Ogawa Zebra Stripe Pants later on, because they wore something similar.
Listen, the late 80s were an interesting time for fashion worldwide, but especially in Japanese pro wrestling. I don't think anybody else besides Ogawa could pull off the zebra nearly as good. I mean, recently there was an act in Dragon Gate, Big Hug, that brought out cow spot themed gear, and it was awful. Be glad you didn't see it, WH. But anyone else, they would let it go, but Ogawa refused to let go of the 80s. He's a man of his ideals, and he will not let go of the 80s.
No, he, even at the age of 57, this man does not let go of the 80s. And you can tell, I can only imagine he still wears a fanny pack. Maybe has some Zubaz that match his gear. Who knows? He would do very well being associated with the likes of Tenryu and Kawada. He was the junior heavyweight kind of representative of the group. Fuyuki and Kawada were meant to go after the All Asia tag belts, and Tenryu and Hara, when they teamed, they were meant to, you know, do battle with Jumbo Yoshiaki Yatsu, you know, as the Olympics. So yeah. He would become junior heavyweight champion three different times. He defeat Dan Crawford, Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, and he would win his third and last junior heavyweight title, PWF title, from Satoru Asako in a tournament final, because the title became vacant. 1998, he would become the regular tag partner for one Mitsuharu Misawa, because Misawa's, you know, two former partners, Kobashi and Akiyama, would team with each other. And Misawa was like, who am I going to team with? Tawai ain't going to leave Kawada for me. And then, so the hunt was on for a new tag team partner. And they would win, their only world tag team title in All Japan as a duo, defeating the team of No Fear, Takao Mori and Yoshihiro Takayama, before losing the belts to Akiyama and Kobashi on October 23rd, 1999. In Noah, he would hold the GHC heavyweight tag team titles twice with Misawa, and he would also be a GHC heavyweight champion. And I'll talk about that when we talk about the end of this match, yeah, and kind of the history of Akiyama Ogawa going from here. Ogawa would soon go on to become a mainstay in the junior heavyweight division in Noah, and would find success there in a tag team with Zack Sabre Jr., winning the tag titles twice with him. And then he would hold those titles another seven times with different partners until his retirement. He would also win the GHC Junior Heavyweight Championship in the last several years. Who did he beat for that? Was it Hayata?
Yeah, so you always have to presume it's automatically Hayata gets the belt to Noah, no matter what. He will get that belt again, I promise you.
And he is one of four men to hold what I would call, what I would refer to as the GHC Grand Slam championship, having won all four original GHC titles in the heavyweight and junior heavyweight division. The others would be Marufuji, Kenta, and who am I missing here? Who else has hit the Grand Slam? There's four.
Sugiura?
No, he was never. Was he? He might have been. It might have been him. We're going to assume it's him. I'm going to look that up. But for you, like, what's your like favorite run of him, of Ogawa? Is it in All Japan or is it in Noah?
No, I think he definitely improved in Noah. And you can kind of see that they even kind of gave his character a more serious lean. Pretty much this match we're going to talk about today kind of led right into the Untouchables with Misawa, which also led to him being much more, you know, because at the time he was rat boy, you know, scummy heel guy, and we saw a bit of this in this match. But from there he became like this technical guy they tried to push him as. That, you know, I remember, because remember when Tenryu came back to All Japan in the mid-2000s, they were doing stuff with Noah. Even Misawa came back to All Japan for a run, or not a run, but a match, a singular match. But I remember Tenryu was really always put Ogawa over as, like, you know, they were old friends at the time, but basically put him over as, yeah, he's a junior, but he can also wrestle heavyweights. And Noah went all in with that, obviously. And to me, the Untouchables run with Misawa, that tag team was great. I don't think, and I like a lot of Ogawa's stuff, don't get me wrong, as a singles guy, but to me, his tag stuff, whether it was with Misawa or Zach, where he really got to have the best overall run. But to me, the Untouchables, that was the best run for Ogawa's career, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is Sugiura. It is Takashi Sugiura, who is the fourth member of the Grand Slam division of NOAH. And yes, so just incredible. Let's talk quickly before we get into the match. I'm going to talk about the card.
Yeah,
that this match is on, but I'm also going to talk quickly about all his accomplishments in professional wrestling. All Asia Tag Team Championship one time with Misawa. So I think they held that and the World Heavyweight title concurrently.
Yeah.
Tag team titles. The World Junior Heavyweight Championship three times. World Tag Team Championship one time. He won a January 3rd Cork and Hall Junior Heavyweight Battle Royal in 1991 and 1995. I don't know how prestigious that actually is, Dylan, but Wikipedia decided to list that.
It's very prestigious.
To win January the day before Wrestle Kingdom at Korakuen Hall. What an honor. World Junior Heavyweight Title League, 1998. He won that. In Dragon Gate, he won the Open the Triangle Gate Championship once with Seiki Yoshioka and Yuya Susumu. I think that's such a great distinction for him to be one of those few people to come from NOAH and be a veteran of his stature to come into Dragon Gate and win one of their major titles in the Triangle Gate. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was around the time. I mean, they're still kind of doing stuff now. NOAH and DG now, they still do stuff. But there was that run. Remember when Nosawa was in Dragon Gate and they were Eita kind of switched back and forth. NOAH and Dragon Gate were all over the place. So they gave Ogawa that stinger kind of run with those guys to get the belts. But I don't think that lasted that long. It was very cool of him to win it, though. Anytime you could get a belt like that, especially one that's Dragon Gate, they are a company that's very different stylistically from what you would expect from Yoshinori Ogawa. I think most people would agree. So for him to get that belt, that's really cool stuff.
In Pro Wrestling NOAH, he has been the GHC Heavyweight Championship once, Tag Team Championship nine times, Zack Sabre Jr. twice, Minoru Tanaka once, Kotaro Suzuki once, Hayata three times, Chris Ridgeway once, and Eita once. I rather like Hayata and Suzuki switched, and he won the tag team titles with Kotaro three times instead of with Hayata.
I agree 1,000,000,000% on that.
GHC Heavyweight Tag Team Championship twice with Misawa. GHC Junior Heavyweight Championship once, and he won the Global Junior Heavyweight Tag League in 2019 with Kotaro Suzuki. So at least they had a nice run in that tournament, and you can watch a lot of those matches over at Wrestle Universe. And what a career. I think if you look at his style, like I'm watching this match, Dylan, and I watch other matches with him, and I always came away with the thought that he is probably the lightest and safest worker in Japan, especially for the King's Road style, because I always said this, I felt he based a lot of his technique, even though they're kind of contemporaries, but I do think Bret Hart came before him and became a star before, and became more, well-known in the 80s and the Hart Foundation and WWF. That I see so much of Bret Hart in Yoshinori Ogawa. The way he throws his punches, he would do the figure four leg lock around the ring post, and just a lot of how he executes his moves. It was very excellent. See what I did there? And so I always felt, did you ever get that impression about Ogawa that maybe he was a fan of Bret Hart? Because I always got the impression he loves Bret Hart. He has a similar haircut to Bret Hart for a large part of his career. He wrestles and his punches are so much like Bret Hart.
Yeah, I could totally see that, to be honest with you. And that's a good point you made. If you want to tell who a wrestler is inspired by, especially an old school guy, if they're inspired by an older guy, because nowadays a lot of wrestling, whether it's in Japan or in America, the punches aren't that prevalent. I remember I was talking to somebody who was training to be a wrestler this a year ago or so, and he was asking me about certain things, and he was talking about I throw the best forearms. Like, I'm all about the forearm strikes. Like, what about you? And I was like, I never learned how to throw forearms. I was throwing punches like back then. So if you want to look at old school guys, you can see it even in All Japan nowadays where, for example, you could tell someone like a Kento is a huge fan of Hulk Hogan. That's very well known. Or Yuma Aoyagi is a huge fan of The Rock based on how he throws his punches. You know, he has a very significant cadence to them. So when you see a Bret Hart punch and an Ogawa punch, the cadence of them is very similar as well. So I think that's a great pickup on your part. Look for the old school people who are there inspired by it. Look at the punches first.
Definitely. So and also I think Owen Hart fan too, because like his enziguri is very reminiscent of Owen Hart's. And so I'm going to assume that he was a big Stampede wrestling fan.
He was Owen was my idol in wrestling. So anybody who like takes after him or any of the Hart family or foundation or whatever, you know, is always on the good side of me personally. Maybe that's why I always liked him from the start, even when people were hating on him. Nowadays, I think his reputation is totally flipped to where everybody recognizes him as a legendary worker and a all time like junior heavyweight player. But
well, I think we'll talk about like kind of like stylistic choices he makes in his matches that like kind of would throw you off if you're watching All Japan Wrestling through tapes and you're not really getting to see all the undercards necessarily. You're just seeing the kind of like the main events and like whatever they could fit into the 1 hour block that made tape. Yeah. And then you see Ogawa and you're like, why are they waste? Like, kind of you would think a lot of people would think, why are you wasting time showing this guy's matches? But he was over with the Japanese fans, right? And those television shows are not meant for us, the Western fans. They're meant for the Japanese audience. So there was an appeal he had, but we'll talk about kind of like maybe why Western fans didn't take to him initially in the late 90s when we talk about this match.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
But let's talk about the match. Let's talk about the card first. This match, Akiyama versus Ogawa, September 11th, 1998, comes from the All Japan Summer Action Series 2, 1998 tour. It's day 15, Dylan, and it's coming from Tokyo, Japan, from the Nippon Budokan. A record, a listed attendance of 16,300 people, which is a pretty common attendance for Budokan at this time.
Yeah, it's so cool. I just get a huge kick out of, you know, obviously nowadays, I mean, you kind of started the show with your rant about how wrestling isn't as good now as it used to be. But one thing cannot be argued. You know, there are some people that may be like, no, WH, the modern wrestling is great. You have to like everything now. But one thing you can't argue is the fan, like the excitement level at Budokan cannot be matched in modern. Like it's impossible. You saw it in this match. You could see it if we watched the card. I'm certain we would come away with similar thoughts on all of them. So you have to, you know, really get into the late 90s when you look at Budokan specifically, and obviously that was All Japan's home turf for all of these years. So you could tell the fans even at this point in 98. I remember when we did the Kawada and Misawa show. We did at the end of it. Because that's one of my favorite matches, personally. And mainly because Kawada, the story of it, Kawada finally getting his win. I remember us talking at the end of that show, and I basically said, look, this was basically the last legendary All Japan moment. Things were going to go downhill to close the decade, where for a lot of reasons, obviously, everybody knows a lot of the turmoil backstage. You know, when it comes to Mrs. Baba, Misawa, shout out Dr. Jonathan Foy and his book Gambaru that talks about all of that more in depth. But things were getting stale. There was distrust backstage. The end of the decade, it was kind of down from where it used to be. But then you see a match like this, which took place a few months after when I made that declaration on the last show. And you could tell these fans are with it. And they are really loving. Even this wasn't a main event match that we're talking about. This was like the fourth from the top. on there. So, you know, and look at how excited they were to go into it. And that's another thing that I loved about this time period, especially. A big reason why, and obviously I think Corquin gets this kind of rep even more so, but really you could say it about any building in Japan around this era. The fans loved underdogs, and they will rally behind you even if you are more of a heel-leaning character at times during your matches. They just want to see a big upset. That's something that the fans really love a lot. So you see a match like this, and it can't be replicated how it was back in these days, for sure.
No, and also a big difference with wrestling, even in Japan, it's caught up to kind of like the audience mentality has caught up to Japan in terms of now they want to be part of the show.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to just enjoy the show. They want to be part of the show. And that's the big problem with Western wrestling, whether it's in the UK or Canada or the United States, is so many people who go to these shows want to be part of the show. They want to say something funny and get a reaction around it from everyone around them. Oh, look, I said something funny about people in the ring. I read the fucking Observer. Oh, I heard something from fucking Dave, and I'm going to say it out loud and get a kick. And I went to an indie show recently, and I had some fucking fan who's like that sitting in the same row as me, like just, you know, at the end. I was sitting kind of one end, but I could still hear him. And he's just like saying all this shit to Timothy Thatcher. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up. He doesn't think you're fucking funny. No one in this fucking building thinks you're fucking funny except the guy who you brought with you, who's going to drive you home back to your mom. Okay? So shut the fuck up. And that's a prevalent, you know, problem in wrestling fandom, I feel. And like, I don't like going to live shows so much anymore because, like, I feel like I just want to enjoy the show. It's like, I don't want to hear commentary during a fucking movie. When I go to the movie theater, I don't want to necessarily hear that shit in a wrestling show either. You know, I just want to enjoy the show. But anyways, and I feel Japan now, Japanese fans are becoming more and more like Western fans, which is really sad for me to say, to be honest, you know, so.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this show at Budokan. We open with a 6-man tag team match. Masao Inoue, one of your favorites. Mitsuo Momota and Yoshinobu Kanemaru defeat Kentaro Shiga, Naomichi Marufuji, and Satoru Asako in 8 minutes and 5 seconds. Geto and Jado, what are they doing here? It's 98. They're like kind of freelancing all over the place. They take on and defeat. My God, they defeated Giant Kimala and Mark Reagan. I have no idea who Mark Reagan is. Do you, Dylan?
Mark Reagan, no. Overall, I will say one thing about the other match. Marufuji had to have debuted probably a week before this. Like, this had to be one of his first matches because he didn't debut until August of 98. So, you know, he had to be really early in his career.
6-man tag team match. He who shall not be named because he's in a lawsuit along with Vince McMahon. Johnny Smith and Wolf Hawkfield defeated Jun Uzumiida, Takao Mori, and Taman Honda in 9 minutes, 59 seconds. 6-man tag team match. Giant Baba, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Rusher Kimura defeat Haruka Aigen, Masanobu Fuchi, and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi. What a collection of names in that match, Dylan.
Especially in 98. You're going to see Baba and Jumbo in 98? Hell yeah. I'm all about that. And about the other match, too, I did want to mention the other one. Honda is another guy I will always say is like historically underrated. Tamon Honda, that is. Obviously, he really only got one real chance to show it in his main event match with Kobashi and Noah, but that was one of Noah's best matches ever. So I always thought I loved the Rolling Olympic Hells and stuff that he did, his submission style. Another very underrated worker in All Japan that you might not, if you only watch the main events, you might not appreciate as much.
A tag team match followed. Gary Albright and Yoshihiro Takayama, the triangle of power, defeated Bobby Duncan Jr. and Stan Hansen. I kind of want to see that match. I always kind of like the idea of a tag team of Albright and Takayama before he would you know, join Omori to form No Fear. Like, you know, Gary Albright teaming with anyone is interesting, but Gary Albright and Takayama,
yeah.
give me some of that. I want to see more of that. singles match, and this is where we get to our match that we're gonna talk about. Akiyama will take on Yoshinari Ogawa. Manuka Mossman, aka Tai Okea, easier to say. That's the reason he changed his name. It was easier to say. 7-match trial series he took on and lost to Mitsuhara Misawa in 7 minutes, 34 seconds. Semi-main event, singles match, Toshiaki Kawada takes on and defeats Masahito Kakihara in 6 minutes, 52 seconds. I'm sure 7 minutes of absolute greatness in that match.
That match ruled, and Kakihara always rules, and I loved it. I wish that we could add that on as a bonus episode at some point, because it just, I love Kawada versus these shoot style guys that they occasionally did in All Japan around this time. His match with Albright is something everybody talks about as well. So you get like these shooter people and Kawada, I'm all about it. Love it.
And in our main event, Triple Crown title match, Triple Crown champion Kenta Kobashi defeats Akira Taue in 25 minutes and 39 seconds. So that's our card. So let's talk about our featured match, Yoshinari Ogawa versus Jun Akiyama. Ogawa is out first with his trademark zebra print shorts. He should have gotten a Zubaz sponsorship at this time. Yes. He totally missed the money train on that. And his signature leather vest. He would switch between this and his black leather motorcycle jacket, but yeah. I like the leather vest look the best for him. And I maintain, again, the look, the greasy hair, long black greasy hair, Bret Hart inspired. I will die on that hill.
Who was more inspired by Bret Hart, you think? Ogawa or Ricky Fuji?
I don't really see too much Bret Hart and Ricky Fuji, but I have to confess, Ricky Fuji is not someone I go out of my way to like explore his matches. So,
What about Onita then? When he dressed up like Bret Hart in the cage match at FMW, probably around this time.
No, there's no Bret Hart in Atsushi Onita at all. And let's just leave it at that. Yes. Akiyama comes out in his trademark blue gear. As soon as Akiyama comes into the ring, though, Dylan, Ogawa throws his towel at him as a sign of disrespect. But you know what? Akiyama catches that towel and wipes his boots down with it. So now Ogawa is like super pissed. He's like, how dare you disrespect my show of disrespect to you? And now it's on. It's on, Dylan.
This, like 2 seconds in, this match was already awesome, even if you didn't know anything about it. But there's 2 points I'll bring up before the match even starts that I think is worth talking about. So this match was set up because Ogawa got the biggest upset of his career. They had a match a couple of weeks before this on, I think, the August 23rd show, where it was Ogawa, Kawada, and Omori versus Akiyama, Misawa, and Asuko was the other member of their team. And Ogawa pinned Akiyama, and it was like a big upset. So now this is kind of like the continuation of that. So there was already heat into this going into this match. And, that's why things turned out how they did. But also, I think the most important point, how good is Akiyama's theme song, Shadow Explosion? Like, this may be literally my favorite entrance theme in pro wrestling history. So anytime I hear it, I always pop big. Like, by far the best, in my opinion. All of the main guys in All Japan had great songs, but his was like the manliest song that has ever been made, I feel like.
Sure, I'm a huge fan of Shadow Explosion, Spartan X and Burning Sword, Kawada's theme. They're all great. But yeah, I mean, I when I play Virtual Pro Wrestling and Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, and they get to use, because it's licensed, licensed All Japan game, like you get to use the music. It's always like, yes, Shadow Explosion.
Yes.
So our match starts with the strike exchange, but Ogawa rakes the eyes and uses his superior speed to dodge Akiyama's blows and lands a DDT. And so here we get to a point. I want to make my point about Ogawa. He would do things like he would grab the ropes. He would rake his opponent's eyes. He would do a lot of heelish stuff from American pro wrestling that I thought when I first saw it, I was like, what's he doing? I don't want to see this stuff. Like, but I can appreciate what he was doing now. But back then, I was not like, I was like, I don't want to see like him grab, like at some point, and we'll talk about it, he grabs the ref to block an exploder suplex from Akiyama. And I was like, I don't want to see that. It'd be like, it's like the prevalence of like someone like, you know, like Tai Chi is more inspired by Yoshinari Ogawa in this era than he would be by Toshiaki Kawada, even though Toshiaki Kawada trained him and was his mentor for a long time. You see more like Ogawa in Tai Chi's wrestling, like where he just do all these underhanded tactics, low blows, and like things like grab the ref to prevent a move being done to him. And so I wasn't really a big fan of that. And I think that's colored a lot of my perception of like comparing him to Misawa, Kawada, Tawe, Kobashi, and Akiyama. So I was like, I'm not really interested in watching this guy. Now I can go back. It's really, I think for me, it's really fun though to go back and watch like the late 90s era where he is part of the Untouchables with Misawa, where he is like, you know, a top guy in Noah. And I'm like, at the time, I'm like, why are they pushing this guy? I was one of those people. Why are they pushing this guy? Why can't we get more Shima? Like I always said, I want more Shima. I want less Ogawa. More Shima in these top spots, and but hey, you know, now I can look back and like watch these matches, and you know, Noah is fine. Like they, Ogawa being champion didn't kill them, it's fine. And so like I can appreciate watching especially his chemistry with Misawa in both All Japan and Noah. And so yeah, I can, but at this time, things like this, the eye rake, I was like, no, I don't want to see that in All Japan.
Yeah, we'll talk about his title when you teased we would talk about it at the end. You know, because there's a lot of thoughts to be had on that decision. But that said, the fun part about this match in particular is, again, because they set this up so perfectly, thanks to good booking by All Japan's part. And this is another thing. I can't remember anything like this really happening that much recently where they would do these like lame build-up shows, usually with these meaningless six-man tags, and then somebody would get an upset and it would lead to a singles match. When's the last time like a New Japan or somebody did that? Because it's such an easy story to set up a singles match, I feel like, and they don't even do that anymore. And because they did it that way, yes, he did all this heel stuff. Listen to the crowd in Budokan, though, way when he did it. They were totally behind the rat boy here
again. Like, I'm not getting into it watching it on tape as a Canadian, but the fans in Japan love it. So back to the match, Akiyama takes over the match briefly before Ogawa's speed gives him the advantage once again by allowing him to dodge Akiyama's shoulder block. And so like while Ogawa's in the corner, so he dodges, Akiyama ends up hitting the post through the ropes, and then that's it. Ogawa smells blood. He sees, okay, I got a body part. I'm going to take it apart like a good technical wrestler does. So he's nursing his left shoulder, and that's where Ogawa focuses his attack, and by he just goes after it like a shark on a victim.
Oh, and another good thing here, too, we have to praise, you know, I know Ogawa is the man of the night here, but we have to praise Akiyama here. I mean, got right away from the start of the match, there's a spot where they do a bunch of the brawling spot was great and all of that stuff. But there's a spot where Ogawa hits a DDT. Akiyama does a great sell of it, like a death sell. The DDT spiked himself, all of that stuff. And then the part with the shoulder, the way he sold his arm and really made Ogawa, again, the big reason why the fans love him so much here isn't necessarily because of the heel work, but more so because we're seeing a guy who's not that important to this point, an undercard guy pretty much, go head to head with a main event player. So everything he did, every time he would get an advantage, whether it was a good guy spot or a heel spot or whatever, it was just so cool to see this guy who nobody would expect get a one up on, you know, a main event player like Akiyama, even though, you know, he's a guy that his career you could look at maybe. You know, we talked about his time, you know, did they wait too long on him and so on and so forth. But I just thought the sell in the corner, the referee did a good job adding in, checking in on it. And Ogawa, like you said, a perfect technical striking ability on the arm there.
Just to answer your question earlier, like, why don't we see this kind of booking in, like, say, New Japan? It's because Gedo is not inspired by Giant Baba booking. He's inspired by, I don't know, like, you know, Jerry Jarrett booking and Jerry Lawler booking. That's what he's inspired by, right? That's his favorite type of wrestling is Memphis. Yeah. So that's why, like, no one thinks, because like no one thinks that old school wrestling booking in today is going to work. But yet, you know what? You see it kind of in current All Japan. You see, like, okay, we're going to give spots and like we're going to book younger guys to get wins over veterans or people higher on the card than them, and then people will rally behind them, especially if you fall through. The thing with Ogawa, why he gets this type of booking is because they're grooming him not to be a big single star, but to become Misawa's tag team partner, to become the regular tag partner of the biggest draw, the biggest star in this company. So they have to make him look important. So they're going to give him a win over Akiyama, because who are Misawa and Ogawa as a tag team going to fight besides Taue and Kawada almost all the time over the tag team titles? It's going to be Kobashi and Akiyama. And it's great because you have guys who are peers, essentially generational peers in Ogawa, Akiyama, who Misawa is going to book against each other lots of times. And he's trying to create a feud and a rivalry between these, because I think, you know, Misawa, to his credit, I think the push is because Misawa wanted him to be his tag team partner. He told Baba, I want this guy to be my tag team partner. And then Misawa, when Baba passes away and he gets the book, he's like, he's all in on fucking Ogawa, man. Like, he books him strong.
Yeah.
When he's the booker in All Japan before the Exodus, and especially in Noah. And you see it, like, he gets the flash pin, right?
Yep.
On Akiyama. And I think, was it the Champions Carnival? Like, later on, he gets a flash pin on him in like 2 minutes. It's a 2 minute match, and Ogawa gets the pin on Akiyama. And it's like, you should, and like, I remember everyone talking about it, the Law and like Meltzer talking about this, because it's like, oh my God, you should do this more often, because you should educate the fans that it's not going to take 20 minutes for a fucking Champion Carnival match to end. It's going to take, it could take two, less than 5 minutes, right? Like, I think, and that's who gets that win. It was Ogawa. He gets a flash pin. It's because to train people, his style of wrestling, this catch wrestling that he does, is dangerous to the King's Road, to the Royal Road, because it's different. And it's like, it's as someone, as an older wrestling fan, you can appreciate it a lot more. Like, I see what they were trying to do in 98 with this guy.
It's a similar story to Omori and his 7 second win over Akiyama, getting the axe bomber over. Like, oh, this kid.
You know, I might be confusing things, but I feel Ogawa got some kind of flash pin on Akiyama as well.
Well, that was kind of his thing in general. But I mean, to your point on that Misawa getting the book and him choosing him as a guy, you could see the sign of that already here in this very match. They cut to Misawa watching the match, backstage at certain points in the match, like him. They show Misawa watching from the behind the curtain or wherever he was at. I thought that was a really cool deal, and it was basically setting up where they were going with the Untouchables forming. And that's why I picked this match actually, in the first place, was because this match directly led to the formation of what was my favorite run of Ogawa in the Untouchables.
Akiyama again gets control with a wrist lock, but Ogawa shows off his Lancashire catch wrestling skills to escape the hold and apply an armbar on Akiyama. Any attempts on Akiyama to try and gain any advantage are foiled again and again by Ogawa's speed and guile. Like, he's just showing the size difference works to his advantage, because Akiyama just thinks, I'm going to power my way through this, like I would against Kawada, like I would against Misawa or even Kobashi. But he can't do that to Ogawa. He's like Ogawa being smaller, but with being smaller, he's so much faster and he's so much smarter than Akiyama as a technical wrestler, that Akiyama is not used to fighting a wrestler like Ogawa. And it's just brilliant how this match is booked to showcase that difference between the two.
Oh, absolutely. It was great work from Akiyama. Again, I think we have to praise him a lot. In 98, he wasn't obviously, like, Misawa was always the ace character of, All Japan. Like, that's just how it goes. Kobashi, always beloved by the fans, always brought the heart and all that stuff. Akiyama wasn't on their level in terms of star power. But in terms of in-ring, I thought, like, if you look at his run, he was like the in-ring guy for the second half of All Japan to me. That was like in-ring MVP, whether it was in tag matches or the singles matches. I just thought he was a best in the world candidate up and down. And what a great guy. I think it was kind of like a situation like this with Ogawa or with Omori, like we talked about in a couple of years after this, the 2000 Champion Carnival. It was like a benefit and a curse almost, because he was so good that he could get anybody over and help make them look strong while also maintaining his own credibility to the point where they would feel comfortable using Akiyama to get a younger or an undercard talent like Ogawa over. And it was good and bad in its own way, but it was just because he was so talented and so great that somebody like Ogawa, they just melded together so good.
Akiyama is able to roll out of an arm scissors and rake Ogawa's foot or his face with the sole of his boot. He shoots Ogawa into the ropes, but Ogawa escapes the sleeper hold attempt and takes Akiyama down with a chicken wing hammerlock. Ogawa switches to an Indian deathlock arm lock and then back to the hammerlock. So again, like, just working the body part. He's going after that left shoulder, that left arm, and it's really, it does pay dividends throughout the match here. They start hitting the ropes and Akiyama does a drop down, and Ogawa decides to just, you know, he's not gonna jump over him, he's just gonna kick him in the head. Big mistake, Dylan, because Akiyama is now pissed, and he unleashes a flurry of elbows before shooting Ogawa into the ropes and hitting his Harley Race inspired jumping knee.
And also a great thing when he hit the stomp to the head, when Ogawa stomped him in the head, he immediately turned to the crowd and went, yeah, there, like he's like, yeah, I outsmarted him. And then immediately, by the time he turns around, Akiyama's already up, already pissed, and he's firing away, and it was freaking great. Love that segment.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, beginning with New Japan's Sakura Genesis from April of 2017 and the highly controversial match between Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. Later this month, we'll go back to October of 1987 with WWF's Saturday Night's main event on NBC, including title matches between Hulk Hogan and Sika, Honky Tonk Man against Randy Savage, and the Hart Foundation facing the Young Stallions. The month rounds out with WWE's Money in the Bank 2011. With CM Punk challenging John Cena for the WWE Championship in Chicago after the pipe bomb promo. Plus, Karen Peterson presents a special show focusing on the Queen of Villains on Netflix, weekly editions of Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course, ad-free shows, news and audio updates sent directly to your email, and so much more beginning at $6 per month, which provides instant 30-day access and extensive archives going back to 2017. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Now Akiyama can start utilizing his superior size and strength to shine, and is able to counteract Ogawa's speed. Akiyama hits a nice Manhattan drop and Northern Light suplex for a two count. Dylan, why is it called the Manhattan drop?
I guess that's some sort of, it's a shot at New York. I think ultimately they consider that part of the body the New York of the human anatomy.
Was that an Adrian Adonis move?
I would presume so.
I can't remember if it is or not.
And he put his all into that, too. It wasn't like a snap. Usually they do it's like up and down. He was like up, held him, and then down.
Oh, yeah. He put some stank on that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, yeah, F you, Ogawa. Now yes. It's my turn. Yes. Akiyama hits a jumping knee to Ogawa in the corner and pulls him out for an exploder suplex. But Ogawa earns his Rat Boy nickname here, given to him again. Not by the Japanese fans, but by Western fans. Yes. And prevents the move by grabbing the referee's collar. And if it was me at the time watching this, I would have been like, what? Bullshit. Fuck you. I don't want to see this in All Japan. But no, I can appreciate it. It's different. So, you know, I appreciate it now.
DQ the match. Throw it out, ref.
He then hits an Owen Hart-inspired enziguri to Akiyama. Another strike exchange before Ogawa hits a backdrop suplex. Akiyama comes back with a double-handed choke slam. He just picks him up and just throws him down.
I don't remember him ever doing that move, to be honest with you.
I don't think he could do it to many people besides Ogawa, though.
Besides Ogawa, yeah, I guess you're right about that. Yeah, because I was that surprised when he busted out. He was like, it was great Kali-style tree slam. Boom.
Akiyama goes to the top rope, but Ogawa cuts his leg off from under him, so he squares himself on the top turnbuckle, and then Ogawa hits a beautiful looking superplex for a two count. Very, again, It reminded the form and grace of the superplex reminded me so much of something Bret Hart would do in a similar situation.
Let me give you a secret here on the Bret Hart superplex, because I stole this myself when I wrestled. Look, if you are a true Hart family aficionado and you do the superplex, look at the feet coming down. If you kick the feet up while you're in the air delivering the superplex, that means you're inspired by Bret. Look at Bret Hart's superplexes and look how he kicks his feet up in the air, but while he's in the middle of the air. That's something I only ever seen him and Owen do. So if he kicks the feet up, that's how you know it's a Bret approved superplex.
Right. Very different from like another type of superplex by like Barry Windham, who I don't think he does that, but like that's okay. His superplex also fantastic as well.
Yes, love Barry Windham. Yes, totally agree.
Another DDT, and Ogawa is ready to get the win and hits a Tiger Driver for a close two, which of course is like, it's like telling that story. I want to be Misawa's partner. This is my fucking audition for being Misawa's partner. And so like, I'm gonna try to get the win with his move, and I'm gonna show him I can hit his move just as well as he. Here's the thing. Misawa wouldn't get the win on Akiyama at this point in Akiyama's career with the Tiger Driver. Maybe 2 years ago? Yes? Here? No. So like, if Ogawa was fighting someone who is Akiyama from 1995, he might have won the match with Misawa's finisher, the Tiger Driver. But not the Akiyama of 98, though.
No, this was a Zebra Driver, not the full-blown Tiger Driver 91 that you would need, I think, at this point to put Akiyama away.
But, you know, Dylan, even if it didn't get him the win, it did one thing, and that was start an Ogawa chant throughout Budokan Hall. They are chanting Ogawa's name loudly to support him, because they're like, oh my God, he hit the Tiger Driver. It's like he got the endorsement from Misawa by being able to use this move in this match. There's a jumbo style backdrop suplex with a bridge for another close two. Akiyama, though, is getting his second win and endures a series of strikes from Ogawa before firing back and hitting the blue Thunder Driver for a close two of his own. And now it's like Akiyama is like, he's got a second. Yeah, I'm done with this guy. And like, I have to think about what he's doing. And this is the great thing about, if you know, good wrestling, and a good wrestler will project the idea that I am now scouting. I've now scouted this guy who's been dominating me this match. I know how to finally defeat him and just start doing that in the match. And that's what Akiyama does from this point on.
Yes, and again, we saw Misawa peek through the curtain of the door, whatever he was looking through the match at. I love this spot, too. After he hit the Tiger Driver, the whole crowd goes crazy for it, and everybody loves it. Ogawa still, even despite it, getting this love from the crowd, he still stayed true to his own character, because he turned around thinking, I can't believe it. He started bitching at the referee and be like, that was two, that was a three, ref, come on. You know, he was yelling at him and being his normal annoying self pretty much. And I thought it was great. Like, great character work from Ogawa here. And obviously seeing this against Akiyama and what it would set up a very exciting next part of the match. I just thought it was so well done all around.
So there is an exploder attempt from Akiyama, but it's blocked. So a second attempt from Akiyama to do the exploder is rolled into a small package for a one and a two, a kick out. So Ogawa is like, oh, I almost got him. And Akiyama's like, this is now in the back of Akiyama's mind. Akiyama swings, Ogawa ducks and rolls him up in a schoolboy for a two count. This is my favorite part. This is my favorite finishing combo in Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, Dylan.
Oh, okay.
Ogawa pokes Akiyama in the eyes, hits a jawbreaker, and then turns it into the figure four jackknife cradle pin. Again, I love using this as a finisher in Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 and No Mercy. They imported it into No Mercy. But, and I think, oh my God, he's got him. That's like his super finisher.
Yeah.
You know, Misawa's got the the Tiger Driver 91. Ogawa has poked to the eyes, jawbreaker into the figure four, jackknife cradle pin. But Akiyama kicks out, and this crowd is going crazy. They love this match.
And it was like I said, this is when things like just got super heated and exciting. Like you said, I need it now. Whenever I see this with Ogawa, I need it to flash the special like in Fire Pro when you hit the big move or the critical on there. For everyone else, it would be the Tiger Driver 91, the Burning Hammer. No, him, it's the eye poke into the figure four cradle there. So Ogawa, all of that was so, it was all, so like the pace of it. Even in 98, I thought this was on par. A lot of times when you think of pace in matches, it would be like a flippy guy, you know, like something like that. But if you look at the speed in which Ogawa did these moves, yes, it was technical. Yes, it was like not any kind of hard hitting or dangerous or anything like that. But it was exciting. Like it was such a fast pace. Like 5, 6, 7 moves happened in a row between these guys. And Akiyama was great along for the ride. And the crowd loved it. They were very appreciative of this, as they should have been.
And here's where, you know, like Akiyama's being able to like, okay, get Ogawa's number comes into play in this next sequence. So Akiyama swerves Ogawa by getting the exploder in place. He's going to hit the exploder, but he, instead of turning him over onto his, dropping him on his back, he reverses the kind of momentum and turns it into a gut buster because he knows Ogawa is likely is going to attempt to roll through the move again and either get him with a cradle, a schoolboy, whatever. So he says, no, I'm not going to go the direction you think I'm going to go with the exploder. I'm going to turn it into a gut buster. Akiyama, tit for tat, okay. Ogawa hits Tiger Driver. Akiyama steals the double arm DDT from Kenta Kobashi. That was his finisher. One of his finishers before he did the Burning Hammer, before he really used the short arm lariat to kill people. So he's like, okay, I'm gonna use my mentor's move on you. And so that's inspired by Kenta Kobashi. Ogawa doesn't get pinned with that, but the Ogawa ring. The Ogawa call from the crowd rings out again. Budokan, Dylan, the All Japan fans, the most loyal fans of All Japan are in the Budokan. They want Yoshinari Ogawa to beat Jun Akiyama in this match.
I know, and that's something, again, you wouldn't expect at the time, because like you said, you mentioned it was a great point talking about how the tape traders and the TV stations, you know, if you were trying to, you had very limited space on a VCR tape back at the time, or VHS tape at the time, and you had to prioritize the big stuff. So, of course, someone like Ogawa would get a little lost in the shuffle. So you're seeing, damn, Ogawa's going at Akiyama, about to beat him. The crowd's going crazy. They want Ogawa to win. That's something you wouldn't expect, but it was so damn good. I'm not surprised that they love this so much. And again, it's a testament to the work of both Ogawa and Akiyama. They made this work, because this style of match, if it were the wrong type of person, it wouldn't get over as well. You know, they would just rally by the known guy. I mean, we saw it. How many times have we seen a storyline, especially in American wrestling, where the veteran will fight the young guy and they just, the crowd sides with the star or whatever. You know, in WCW, it happened all the time because of how stupid they were and everything they did. But here, it was executed so perfectly that it worked exactly like they wanted.
Akiyama finally hits an exploder, but Ogawa kicks out at 2. Akiyama knows he has this, though, and immediately goes for the second exploder in a row, and he gets the 1, 2, 3 in 11 minutes and 10 seconds. My God. That those numbers are just, I'm just looking at those numbers, Dylan, for an All Japan match, and I am just crying with happiness at a match this good came in at under 15 minutes. Oh my God.
And look at all the stuff we got to talk about in this match too. Like, for not a long amount of time, there was so much intricate detail that I'm so glad we got to cover. And hopefully everybody out there, all the viewers and listeners, think I did a good job on that ultimately. But I thought we had so much and so many angles to talk about, whether it was the booking, whether it was Akiyama's performance and how he was able to put Ogawa over and make him look like a star in his level without losing his own credibility. Ogawa, the cheating ways, the technical ways, the different style that he brought. I think that's just so cool that they were able to make this work in such a good way, in such a good time, like you said. But like I said, we had all sorts of stuff to talk about through this short-ish match, and it was very cool. And as I said, what a way to kickstart the Untouchables, as we would see Misawa come into the ring immediately after the finish.
Yeah, the post-match is just as significant as what we saw in the match itself, and that's Misawa in a beautiful satin jacket. We'll be talking about satin jackets before we close out the show, by the way. It will be, you know, comes out, and he's, like, checking in on Ogawa, and he's, like, basically he's telling everyone, he's my partner. I love this match. I thought he was great in it. He's the guy I need to make the Untouchables to help me regain the world tag team titles. And yeah, so like it's one endorsement. I kind of symbolically, I feel like he deliberately just turns his back, gives his back to Akiyama.
Yeah.
And he's just saying, you're not important to me. You know, it's not sports entertainment. So like Akiyama's not going to necessarily jump him, but it's symbolic. Like he's checking in on Ogawa. He's turned his back on his former tag team partner in Akiyama. And now it's going to be on. So from this point on, it's Akiyama, Kobashi, Kawada, Tawe, and now it's Misawa with Yoshinari Ogawa. Yoshinari Ogawa getting elevated to main event scenes, because anytime he's going to be fighting for the world tag team titles against either the Burning or the Holy Demon Army, he's going to be in the main event with Misawa. And that's, you know, hey, being in the main event in the tag team is better than not being the main event as a singles.
Oh, 1,000,000% agree with that. You know, definitely, like, this is where Ogawa's push really started, because before this, and before this little run he had with Akiyama, he meant really not that much. And it's unfortunate to say that the junior title just was not that important in the 90s in All Japan. So for him to get this vote of confidence from Misawa and move up and to get to do all kinds of cool stuff there, it was just great. You know, like it's huge for his career, and he deserved it because he did bring something different to the table. And it's funny because we kind of mentioned earlier how Gedo in New Japan, he isn't inspired by this kind of booking, which the booking is what it is. But if you look at Ogawa's run, I mean, this match here, this would not have been out of place in a Memphis or, a Mid-South. Something that kind of deal with the cutoff spots he was doing, the heel tactics he was doing, that stuff worked then, and it worked in Budokan. And Ogawa was the one who decided to take that tact, because, you know, he probably wasn't going to be able to do a Kobashi match, you know, like at the epic level of him, or Misawa at the level of him. So he found his own lane to go in, and that's what made him worthwhile in this run, because he brought something different and a different style to it.
Akiyama and Ogawa would enjoy a nice rivalry in the remainder of their time in All Japan. I remember getting one of my tapes. Is like, it's a series. It's a 4-on-4 series. It's like the Untouchables, Misawa, Ogawa, Kakihara, and who else? One more person, Ogawa, Misawa, Masahiro Kakihara. And I think, maybe Asuko, maybe just those three. Okay, they're going to be in a series of matches with Burning. So it's Kobashi, Akiyama, and Shiga, Kentaro Shiga.
Yeah.
So they have to draw balls out of a hat, and if whoever, you know, with the get the corresponding number or color, I forget which one it was, will face each other. So Akiyama gets Akiyama. So Misawa gets Shiga, okay. Kobashi. Gets Kobashi gets Kakihara, I think. I can't have it wrong. But Akiyama gets he gets Ogawa, and he just throws the ball down in disgust. He's like, and Ogawa just comes over to him. What? Like because he wanted to face Misawa, right?
Yeah.
Akiyama wanted to face Misawa in this kind of like round robin. He wanted to win the lottery and get Misawa. But he got Ogawa instead, and he just threw the ball down in disgust. And Ogawa's like, just goes over to him and just starts pushing around. It's like, hey, I'm not good enough for you? Me? Like, I take you to the limit, pal, and like this. So, again, smart booking, just create this, you know, this disdain between Akiyama and Ogawa that would play out not only in the remainder of their time in All Japan Pro Wrestling, but in the early days of Pro Wrestling Noah. And that would culminate, really, in 2002, Dylan, April 2nd at the RIK Coliseum, Yoshinari Ogawa would hit the pinnacle of his career in terms of like a title win of like reaching the highest level in professional wrestling by winning the GHC heavyweight title in a very, very surprising booking move by Mitsuhara Misawa over Jun Akiyama, who had just finally won the title, won a big title from a big star, and like established, I'm now a main event guy. He should have won he should have won the Triple Crown, probably.
Yes.
But then that reign is cut short by Ogawa, and it's just like, I remember the forums going nuts about this. It's like, why would you do this? Why would you do this? But you know, if you watch that win, it's like people are happy at the time. I don't think necessarily Japanese fans were like too on board with Ogawa title reign or at the expense of Akiyama, you know, but he has two successful title defenses. He has one against Akira Taue. He has one against Takeshi Rikio before dropping the belt to one of the most popular and I would say greatest JC heavyweight champions of all time. And that's Yoshihiro Takayama. And I remember when Takayama beat him. I think, as I recall, a very like decidedly one-sided match.
Yes, yes.
People were very ecstatic in the reaction to Takayama winning the JC title over Yoshinari Gawa. I think in part because of how much they love Takayama, but also in part because of how much they weren't really feeling the Ogawa title run. But hey, you know what? He can at least say, I used to be a GHC heavyweight champion. He has that on his portfolio.
Well, you know, and again, I'm a fan of Ogawa's work for sure, and I was a defender of his wrestling, but I think that decision really colored a lot of people's opinions on Ogawa in a negative way, just because of how much it hurt Akiyama, first of all, and secondly, just because it was such a weird decision, to be honest with you. I remember reading about how they thought it was because Ogawa was like Misawa's secret brother. That's why they put it in there. Like you know, it was something nobody knew about. But they were trying to say, oh, they look kind of similar in the face and all of this. Just all kinds of stuff trying to explain this crazy decision at the time. But if you want to know anything about Ogawa's title reign, and you are definitely one of the preeminent sources when it comes to wrestling fashion, especially in Japanese pro wrestling, do you remember what he wore, the tweak he made to his zebra gear at the time, to his gear at the time?
So in this match, it's a two-tone. It's solid black and on the seat of his bicycle shorts, and it's zebra print on the front. So you know, he would do variations where he would change his black boots to white boots. He would actually have solid zebra prints back and front. But I don't know, is that the tweak you're talking about?
No, when he won the title, the back part, the black part of his tights, he put, and this is exactly what it said on his tights, GHC heavyweight champion on the back, just to remind people that he is in fact the champion, in case you cannot believe it. Yes, I have it written on my tights.
Yes, also he would start putting his name on his tights, on the seat of his shorts, whether it's just like his last name Ogawa or Yoshinari Gawa in different types of fonts too.
Has anybody ever done that? Because we have seen people put their name on their gear and stuff. That's not too uncommon, but has anyone just put I'm the champion on their tights, you know, overall? I just thought
that was hilarious. I think Ravishing Rick Rude did something similar by putting the Intercontinental title spray painted onto his
tights. That was way better, though. That was way more stylish. Yeah.
No, I don't think you could get away with doing, you know, like an airbrush on zebra print bicycle shorts.
No, it was just literally like black tights, and the font was like the most basic white letters on the back. Champion, very stylish.
You know, I'll take that over like what they call the gangster lettering.
Oh yeah, that would have been hilarious.
That's like very common for people like Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr. Okay. I'll take his boring New Roman whatever over the font that, you know, a lot of the you know, so-called gangsters in wrestling wanna.
I don't think Ogawa is any kind of gangster type of person.
No,
to be fair, but
that's more Masahiro Chono is trying to be Yakuza. True. But yeah, that brings us to the end of our match review. And Dylan, before we go, before I get to your plugs, I just want to plug something very quickly. And that is, we are in the midst of selling a very special Long and Winding Railroad product. And that is the Long and Railroad, Winding Railroad satin jacket. It's on pre-order now, as of this recording, but by the time this airs, it might not be in the pre-order phase. So if you are still seeing this and it's still in the pre-order phase, you will be able to order whatever size you want and get the order fulfilled. We also are having a 10% discount. So in Canadian dollars, because I'm in Canada, so it's geo-locked. It would be $175 Canadian, which is, and then you get 10% off, which is $17.50, and then so it's $157.50 Canadian. So I used XE.com to convert this earlier. It's $118 US. It's free shipping. And I'm going to just kind of go through the pre-order info here. Let me just scroll down here. So if you see here, as I scroll it down, the item is pre-ordering means you'll guarantee an item in your desired size once the pre-order has finished. Only sizes that remain in stock will be available. So this is not print on demand. This is like we have to make these, a certain number of these. And once those numbers are gone, Dylan, unless there's a massive demand for it to come back, that's it. This is like a limit. This jacket is a limited time offer only. You can see the design here. It's we're going to show a modeling of it by so limited edition with added bonuses. You get a money back guarantee. If you don't like this product, just send it back in the condition you received it within 30 days. You can do size exchanges if the size isn't the size you originally picked, doesn't work for you. You within a certain time frame, you can send it back and we can exchange the size for you. And by we, I mean chop-tees.com. and like I said, this item isn't made on demand. There's only a finite number of them, and that once they're gone, and don't miss out. So we have a Senor Bird here, yeah, modeling the front of the jacket. You'll see the Post P logo here. And of course, we also have, let me scroll back. If you look here, the Long and Winding Railroad in that classic serif there. Look at that. It's beautiful. Oh,
so much better than Ogawa's tights.
Fun. And then here's the back. It's, of course, the classic, the Pillars t-shirt, graphic, Kawada, Kobashi, Taue, and Misawa. The Long and Winding Railroad is on the back of this jacket. Dylan, I'm going to take my vacation in Japan early winter this year, before the end of the year. I'm going to be wearing this fucking thing. And maybe I'll just show up at Corken Hall, not to watch wrestling, but just to make everyone jealous there.
I think that they're not going to, nobody's going to know what to do with themselves if you show up. Look at all of the styles you have. Whatever your favorite style is, the Long and Winding Royal Road has it here.
Look at that.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Look at these guys. Go.
Look at that. I mean, look at that. Look at the color schemes. You've got orange and white, yellow and black, green and silver, red and beige. You've got fanciness. You've got coolness. You've got a hard style. You can show up anywhere in the world with this jacket, and you will just look amazing.
Listen,
and everyone,
Dylan,
will respect you.
You know who's going to wear this? People in the industry are wearing this.
Yes.
They're going to be, or they're pre-ordering already. Don't be left out. You know, someone in the industry wore the t-shirt, and sales were like, where can I get one? Well, guess what? You want this jacket? When you see people in the industry wearing this jacket, and you're like, where can I get mine? You go to chopped-tees.com. You go to Long and Winding Railroad, the tab on the site. You go to this jacket, and you get it before it's gone, because once it's gone, it's gone.
And I'm not really one to put over people, but I will say, when it comes to people in the industry, the people that are tight with you, the people who come on this show, the people that have worn your shirt, are some of the absolute, like, tastemakers, really, in wrestling. People want to be like them, ultimately. So I'm just, my fear with this jacket coming out is that with these people you're talking about in the industry wearing them, they're going to come out with them, they're going to give you a lot of love, but the problem is that they're, like you said, they're not made to order. There's a finite number of them. So will it lead to fights? Will it lead to brawls?
Maybe.
Stage? Will it lead to more problems in the locker room of these people? Is that what you, is that your true plan, WH?
To call no.
To wreak havoc in the locker rooms of wrestling?
No. I don't need to be doing that myself. That people in the business do that themselves. Like, that's, I don't need point. To be, that's, I have nothing to do with causing drama backstage. That's all wrestlers, because wrestlers are all marks, and they're all marks for themselves, and they're all marks for the business. And then thus that creates all the drama backstage.
But most importantly, they are marks for the long and winding Royal Road second.
Well, some of them are. Yes. Some of them are. The smart ones.
They all should be. The smart ones are, yes.
The smart ones are. The ones who epitomize true wrestling love the long and winding Royal Road. And Dylan, thank you again for being on the show. Please tell everyone where they can find you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on, WH. It's been really cool, as it always is, and I know it would be, and I knew it would be. Once again, thank you to all the listeners of the show and Post Wrestling. I've had a great relationship with WH and everybody on the network that I've met before, and I really appreciate all of you guys and the great work you're doing. John and Way, I'm an OG fan of theirs and all of the great work they're doing, whether it's, you know, you've seen different things getting covered. Karen and Bruce have done their thing, you know, with wrestling before. So I just love all of Post Wrestling and all of the fans out there. In terms of the Eastern Lariat, check the show out at Eastern Lariat on X, Instagram, YouTube. We've got all of that stuff. We're doing different things coming up soon. We've got some good plans in the future for the show, myself and Striga. Most importantly, on cagematch.net, where we're affiliated with that. Striga's like the one of the main dudes of Cage Match, obviously. And I hang around there for the purposes of our shows that we do. But follow us on all of those things, wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, all that cool stuff. You're going to get some cool stuff there. If you want to follow me personally and know what's going on in my life, and some of my takes about wrestling, or DM me, I would love to talk to any of you guys out there that want to talk about anything. Follow me at @Viva_0, Z-E-R-O, obviously. And I will talk to you about anything. I love anybody who's fans of me, my show, or wrestling, most importantly at all. And I have a lot of love for anybody. And that's what this show and this network always emphasize to me.
Awesome. Big fan of the work you do over at the Eastern Lariat with Strick and a multitude of guests. You're always bringing on some really interesting people in the pro wrestling, pro res podcasting sphere onto your shows. And one day maybe I'll be deemed worthy enough to come back to the Eastern Lariat.
You're welcome on it anytime, my friend. You, anytime.
Well, maybe more if you want to do like a retro review or something like that, I can come on. Not so much, like I try to do my best, but you know, we should maybe if you ever want to talk about current All Japan, I still really enjoy that. And I try to keep up with Marigold as much as I can as well, because I do enjoy that product. I'll say this, I enjoy Marigold a lot more than I enjoy current Stardom. I wonder why that is. Maybe because of the Booker.
Well, whoever runs Stardom, he's not. The Okada from Stardom definitely is not, living up to the standards of the past, but he's still new. He's still trying to find his way in Japanese wrestling, WH. So let's give it all some time and try to be patient. And it's not, let's face it, it's not worse than a lot of this other crap that we have.
No, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
Anyways, thank you everyone for supporting the show. Thank you for, buying the merchandise over at chive-tees.com. Go to the Long and Winding Railroad tab there. Go to the Post Perez tab there. Go to the MCU later if you love the Marvel movies. We're currently covering Agatha All Along here on MCU later. That's on the cafe side of things, so you will have to sign up for the Patreon for that. But hey, you know what? Like the Eastern Laird, for less than the cup of cup of coffee at fucking Starbucks, you can get into the door and you can download anything that I do over at postwrestling.com's cafe. And for like less than a cup of coffee, than a venti at fucking Starbucks, you can listen to everything that the Eastern Lariat does. $5 US dollars just do it, folks. Just go patreon.com/EasternLayer. Did I get that right, Dylan?
That's exactly right. And yes, there's literally thousands of hours of stuff over the last 5 years since we've been doing the Patreon on there. And we cover literally everything, too. Like, I'll do shows on the tournaments, the G1, all those shows, Champion Carnival. We did all of that stuff. N1, I talked about a bunch. Mari Gold's tournament, I just wrapped up. So all kinds of cool stuff going on there with Dreamstar, 5-star Grand Prix. We did all that. And all the new shows and all the cool stuff that happens in the world of Japanese wrestling, I try to get as much of it as I can on there. So please check it out.
Where else are you? Are you people going to listen to talk about Kyushu Pro and Dove?
Not Dove Pro. I don't know if they're still around. I just haven't watched them in like 8 years.
Strick is a big fan.
Maybe he is, but I don't even think he knows where to watch them, ultimately. Okay. I don't think anybody knows. So,
Kyushu Pro, you're still covering that occasionally.
Kyushu Pro is a very good company, actually, and free to watch on YouTube. So I enjoy their shows. Hidemaru Sasaki, that is my guy, and they have good wrestlers. So even though it is a local company, it's one of the few, and anybody who knows me knows that I'm incredibly, Stardom. They definitely have problems. I'm not saying they're perfect. New Japan, I'm not saying they're perfect, but I will watch them way, way sooner than I watch an indie show like in America most of the time. But Kyushu Pro, one of the best indies, I feel like, in any country.
There you go. Maybe post Perez will start covering Kyushu Pro because of this endorsement from Dylan here. But on behalf of Dylan, thank you to everyone for listening. And until next time, I will say goodbye.
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself, like you were hiding behind a mask? BetterHelp online therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.